Schrader Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnegat Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs. We're back on Veterans Radio, and as the music inspires us to talk about World War II, we're going to get into that. We're talking about the United States Coast Guard on Veterans Radio today. If you have a comment or a story you'd like to add, give us a call at 877-573-7825. We've been talking about the history of the Coast Guard. Now we're going to go into a specific time period. And I want to welcome to Veterans Radio right now the author of a book called The Lucky 13, D-Days in the Pacific. His name is Ken Wiley. Ken, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
You are in the Coast Guard, and we've got another guest on the phone. I'll welcome him right now, Mr. Boone, Joseph Boone. Welcome to Veterans Radio. He's out there somewhere, I hope. We'll get him back in a second. But, all right, Ken, tell me a little bit about, you were in the Coast Guard prior to World War II, and how did you get overseas, let's put it that way?
Actually, I wasn't in prior to World War II. I went in July of 1943. I was only 15 years old when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and 16 years old when I graduated from high school. I was one of five brothers. My older three brothers all went into the Army Air Force, and I kept badgering my dad every day to let me join something. I went to every recruiting officer was. I tried the Navy V-12 and everything, but you had to have parents' permission if you were not 18 years old. So finally, getting up close to my 18th birthday, he agreed to let me join something, and so I went to the first recruiting office I came to, and it was the Coast Guard. And I wanted to fly, so I went in and asked a recruiter if I could get into the air part of the Coast Guard, and he assured me that I could.
Oh, yeah.
So I signed the papers, rushed them back home. My dad signed them, and they sent me to St. Augustine, Florida, for boot training. Well, I had a rude awakening when I got there. There was no Air Corps that I was going to get into, and consequently, our whole group went from the company that I was with, and boot camp went up to Landing Craft School in Camp Lejeune. And we had begun to find out in boot camp exactly what they were talking about, but keep in mind that I had never seen an ocean until then.
That's right. I forgot to point out that Ken is from Tennessee.
I came out of Texas at that time, and I had never seen an ocean, and then they said, well, because the Coast Guard is familiar with small boats, the Navy wants you to man the landing craft, and so that's why we went to Landing Craft School at Camp Lejeune, which is a Marine base. And from Camp Lejeune, they cut our training short there in order to go out and pick up a ship, which was just coming out of dry dock. We headed out down to the canal, to the Pacific. And when we got to Hawaii, they said, you guys are too green for this next operation. So they took half of us off of that ship and put us over onto the Arthur Middleton, which is the ship that I was served my time on.
Okay.
Then, of course, it was a matter of a few weeks in maneuvers, and we went to the invasion of the Kwajalein, or Marshall Islands, which was Kwajalein, and we talked.
And tell me about these ships that you were on. I'm talking right now.
Okay,
with
I'm sorry. The first ship that I was on was the USS Cambria, and we got it actually on a shakedown cruise right out of the shipyard. And then when we got to Honolulu, they transferred me over to the Arthur Middleton. The numbers are important here. The Cambria was APA 36. The Arthur Middleton was APA 25.
What do the numbers signify?
Well, the numbers signify the sequence in which the ships were built. And that's what I was going to get to. Back when the war started, we had nothing. We had the 17th ranked army in the world. 9 of our 11 battleships were sunk in Pearl Harbor. We had no play. We'd been moved out of the Pacific. England had been thrown off the European continent, and we were sitting here like an isolated island. And it would take ships and troops that we didn't have to counterattack this. So consequently, this is where the great generation came together. And within moments, it seems like, they came up with a lot of different ways to fight this war. One of those ways was to come up with a ship, which they call the APA, Auxiliary Personnel Attack. And on this ship, which would carry about 1,500 to 2,000 troops, assault troops, they would also carry 30 of the landing craft, which you referred to as Higgins boats or LCVPs. The ship would take you the 6,000 miles, but the Japanese are not going to furnish you a dock to unload on, so we would have to come from about 7 miles out and put all the troops in these boats and take them into the, you know, the raw hostile beach, really. And consequently, the LCBP came into play because it was the boat that would do that. It was a fantastic boat. People have referred to it as a cracker box made out of plywood, and they were right. This is exception to the fact that it was highly maneuverable, it was faster than any other landing craft we had, and it was the point of the spear for every invasion that we made in World War II. And there were about 100 total invasions made.
And the Coast Guard was pretty much involved in all of them, weren't they?
They looked at the Coast Guard first because, like I said, they, excuse me, Bob, they said that we were specialists in small boats. And so the Coast Guard and the Marines were number one. You know, the Marines were always first. And we got to join the Marines then and be part of that number one. The landing on Guadalcanal was Coast Guard and Marines. And that was the first one that we made. And you mentioned a moment ago the story about Douglas Monroe. He was our icon that we looked up to.
Well, I want to continue on. And Ken's very active in Veterans Affairs, and he's got a program that's going on. I want to talk to him a little bit later about that. I want to make sure that if I've got Joe Boone, are you on the line?
Yes.
There you are. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you very much, Joe. This is the personal guide I was talking about earlier in the program. We're talking about the United States Coast Guard during World War II. And Joe was a crew member of the LST-884. And another member of that crew happened to be my father, Cliff Throneberry, or better known as Bill, during World War II. And, Joe, I wanted to just ask you a little bit if you could tell us about your activities during the invasions of Iwo Jima and Okinawa.
All right. Our first action was at Iwo Jima. I believe it was on February the 18th, 1945. We left the Marshall Islands, headed to Iwo Jima. We were loaded with Seabees and all their heavy equipment. Their objective was to repair and rebuild two or three landing strips on Iwo Jima as they were able to take control of that property, to be an emergency landing place for B-29s coming from Japan, and had to have some place of emergency to land because they couldn't get all the way back to Saipan and Guam. And we were there for 2 weeks. We got banged up a little bit and had to go from there to Saipan for repairs. And from Saipan, we load up and were instructed to go to Okinawa and to become part of a diversionary force. Now, the Battle of Iwo Jima was probably one of the most difficult battles of the war. And one of the big problems there was the volcanic ice on the shore was not like it was not sand. And when we went into the beach, we dropped an anchor about 50, 75 yards out, stern anchor, to help pull us off the beach if we need to be pulled off. But there we had to keep the engine one-third speed ahead to stay on. It was a terrible place to have to make a landing, but we did. Anyway, going to Okinawa, we left from Saipan and headed for the southern tip of Okinawa where we were to back at diversionary activity.
Joe, just let me interrupt for a second. Could you describe how big an LST is and actually what it does, how many people did it carry on board?
Sure. An LST is larger than most people realize. I think it's a small boat, but it's actually a 367, 68-foot landing craft that has two front, large front doors that open up and a ramp drops down just as they hit the beach. And if it's a good landing on the beach, we can get it right up, get the Marines or Seabees, whoever carry, right up to where they can walk out off the ramp up onto dry land. And we had a crew of, I think, 119 sailors and officers on our LST, but that would vary at times depending on what your destination was, what you're carrying. The LST is also a multi-purpose vessel. Sometimes they use them in emergency hospitals. Sometimes they use them to carry prisoners back and forth, so on. Or in our case, at Iwo Jima, we had to go out one time and pick up about, I don't know how many hundred tons of ammunition because the Marines were getting short on the front lines. So it was probably the workhorse of the war as far as invasion for concern.
It certainly sounds like it. Let me take you up to Okinawa. We've got about a minute, and I'm going to have to take a break. But can you tell me what happened to the LST-884 as you were going into Okinawa?
All right. D-Day, April 1st, 1945, happened to be Easter Sunday also. We headed in about 5:30 in the morning with our 300 Marines and all their equipment. And we got a message that enemy planes were in the area. So about that time, three of them came around the corner of the convoy we were in. First two coming in and got shot down. And the third one, we hit as it's coming at us. He's making a suicide dive.
Okay, I got a break right there. We got a suicide dive. We'll be right back after this message. Come back to Veterans Radio.